Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1358, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 32. This is being recorded on November 9th of the year 2024. For Monty, this is Dave Emery saying, welcome to the program. Before we get into the discussion, Monty, I want to remind listeners, again, I don't think we're going to make it. I really don't. And I really think that you have an obligation to preserve the record of what has happened for those generations to come afterward. The best way of doing that that I can think of is to get the 64 gigabyte flash drive. We have too much material now for 32 gigs. There was a link at the top of the description for this program and at the spitfirelist.com website that will enable you to obtain that flash drive. I get no money from this whatsoever. Monty gets no money from this whatsoever. And be sure, if you're listening to this on a station that it isn't on very many stations, but please support those listener-sponsored stations to which you listen, because let me tell you, they're going to go after everything, including the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, people's incomes. It's surreal. But again, I get no money whatsoever from that flash drive, neither does Monty. If you have technical problems with the flash drive, contact the station management here, because I don't have the tech capabilities. I'm not involved with it, and I can't help you in that regard. Anyway, Monty, we've spoken in the past, and I've opined that for a younger person trying to learn about what happened in this country, there are two events themselves inextricably linked that they need to understand. One is the assassination of President Kennedy, which is a coup d'etat. Two wars, both thought to have ended long before, ended on that day. One was World War II. And the Axis won, not the Allies, the Axis. And the other was the American Civil War, the war between the states. And the South won, not the Union. And if that seems bombastic, preposterous, just watch what's about to happen in this country, or what is happening. And the other is the Second World War. You can't separate out the forces that killed Kennedy from the Second World War. But again, this country is not a democracy. It does not have a free press, and there is no, quote, left, unquote. It's controlled by the intelligence community. A lot of people who staff at the proletarian level, to coin the term, they think that they're working for, an alternative political reality. Uh-uh. You're being manipulated. You're working for the same old bars. And in that regard, by the way, Marty, you notice, all of a sudden, the Trump, Team Trump, there's no discussion of rigged elections or anything like that. it just dropped right off. This election wasn't rigged. And no, people don't realize the extent to which they're being BS'd, to coin the term.
The election went fine. The Führer got in.
No rigging. Frigging, no rigging, Oh, man, are we in for it? But, to give you an idea, all this BS, we're going to talk about Trump and how he supposedly was hooked up with Putin and all the things he did. And, I don't like the term immediately about the deep state, because it's not a deep state. It is the state. And this
is the name of the game. The name of the game is fascism, and it is the state. It is the state.
Yep, and in that regard, the following article from the New Republic of November 6th of 2024, that this was on Yahoo News, it is by Edith Olmsted, O-L-M-S-T-E-D, quote, "Are we just ignoring how Russia openly helped Trump on election night," unquote. Polling locations in Democratic strongholds all across several key battleground states received a slew of phony bomb threats on election day, and while the FBI deemed that none of the threats were credible, they still represent a disturbing feature of U.S. elections, alleged interference from Russia. Parenthetically, one of the many things I've talked about in the past is the fact that the CIA cyber weaponry can be made to mimic an attack from Russia, from China, from Iran, from an Arabic country, or from Korea. So, alleged interference from Russia. We're going to talk about how, you know, pro-Russia Trump is later on in the program, or maybe in our next. But continuing, the FBI released a statement Tuesday saying that it was, quote, aware of bomb threats to polling locations in several states, many of which appear to originate from Russian email domains, unquote. Bear in mind what I just said. While the FBI underscored that none of the threats had been found to be credible, their purpose was undoubtedly to sow chaos and fear as Americans attempted to cast their ballots. Many of those threats were directed at sites in Fulton County, Georgia, the state's most populous Democratic stronghold. Law enforcement officials received at least 5 threats toward 2 Union City voting sites, and 2 polling places were evacuated for 30 minutes after receiving threats. And we'll talk about, by the way, the articles that we've spoken about, and including the article about Nuremberg on the Hudson, will be in the descriptions for this program. But yeah, this is just a wonderful, scrolling down, Monty. It talks about the many places, Wisconsin, 2 polling places in Wisconsin, Arizona, Pennsylvania, the places where the election was deemed to be up in the air, they got bomb threats. Isn't that interesting? And of course, it was necessarily Russia, right? I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. Why don't you read your next story? This is from CNN from October 29th of 2024 by Chris Boyette, B-O-Y-E-T-T-E. Police are searching for the person who set ballot boxes on fire in Washington and Oregon. Here's what we know, unquote. And bearing in mind what Monty has spoken about in the past, about the domestic Gladio, you know, the active duty Marine major who was opening the doors for the January 6th coup. But continue, keep that in mind as a background element for all of the things we're talking about here. Why don't you read part of this article here?
Sure. Quote, hundreds of ballots were destroyed or damaged in fires set Monday at 2 ballot drop boxes in the Pacific Northwest. And investigators are searching for a person they believe is responsible for both incidents. Almost all the ballots that were damaged or destroyed were in a drop box in Vancouver, Washington, while most ballots in a drop box in Portland, Oregon survived the fires set the same day, election officials said. The incidents are believed to be connected to a third fire on October 8th, also in Vancouver. The fire came after a U.S. Department of Homeland Security bulletin from September obtained by the watchdog group Property of the People warned, quote, some social media users are discussing and encouraging various methods of sabotaging ballot drop boxes and avoiding detection, lightly heightening the potential for targeting of this election infrastructure through the 2024 election cycle, end quote. The fires were started by devices placed outside the drop boxes, authorities said.
The entire article will be on the in the descriptions for the show,
sure.
and so in the interest of time, so far we talked about the bomb threats, coincidentally targeting areas in swing states like Georgia that were the most democratically populous areas, meaning Democrat with a capital B, and fires in the ballot boxes. What is your reaction to this, Mommy? Just give us your candid thoughts on this.
I mean, ultimately, it's an extension of what was going on in the going all the way back to the first Red Scare, and then following through in the post World War One environment. With the revanchist movement that was here in this country, attacking leftist leaders through the end of the Second World War with the German-American Bund all the way up to the Silver Shirts, the John Birch Society, the Minutemen. This is simply an extension of the tactics of what was dubbed by one of the leaders of the far right in the 1950s, a colonel by the name of Aulus Amos, leaderless resistance. And this is, in fact, the tactic that's being used today. This is Gladio-esque leaderless resistance activities against any hope of liberalism in our time. And it has effectively died.
Yep. There is something that I think really could be extended as, there's a heading for a section of this article. This really could be characterizing our entire political process, these programs, and the fate that has befallen, well, not befallen America, but, you know, whatever can we do, you know, all of these things have just descended on us from heaven, you know. I have to be careful, this is going to be on the radio, but this is what happens in America. This is what happened. The section is called How the Ballot Boxes Went Up in Flames. Yeah, you betcha the ballot boxes went up in flames. And I'll tell you, it is quite remarkable. And the again, the article, the entire article will be on the website, on the description for the website, spitfirelist.com. Again, I pick up no money from this. Now, the next article, yeah, we hear all about Putin and the Russians in the election cycle. What I'd like to do, Monty, there is a wonderful blog that had just a really great archiving of all the things that Trump did to appease Russia. It's called the Moon of Alabama blog from, coincidentally, January 6th of 2021. Quite a day, that, you know. How Trump appeased Russia, unquote. What I'd like to do, Monty, I'm going to read the introduction, and then we'll take turns reading the headlines, because what the blogger here, Bernhard, has done is archive all of the great things Trump did with regard to Russia. 2 years ago, we wrote about Trump's relation with Russia, quote, Putin asks and Trump delivers a list of all the good things Trump did for Russia. It may be too sarcastic. Trump obviously wants better diplomatic relations with Russia. He is reluctant to counter its military might. He is doing his best to make it richer. Just consider the headlines below. With all those good things Trump did for Putin, intense suspicions of Russian influence over him is surely justified. By the way, he's being sarcastic. Right. At the end, there followed 34 headlines and links to stories about Trump actions, from closing Russian consulates to U.S. attacks on Russian troops that were hostile to Russia. In fact, no other U.S. administration since the Cold War has been more aggressive toward Russia than Trump's. But some U.S. media continue to claim that Trump's behavior toward Russia has not been hostile at all. Consider this one in Politico about what anti-Russian hawks in the incoming Biden administration. Newland, that by the way is Sticky Vicky Newland, the cookie monster of the Maidan. Stan, by the way, you want to talk about the state, not the deep state. She worked, yeah, she worked for Obama, she worked for Biden, but before that she worked for Dick Cheney. I mean, it's just... Newland and Sherman, who entered academia and the think tank world after leaving the Obama administration, have been outspoken critics of President Donald Trump's foreign policy, particularly his appeasement of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Then Bernhard goes on to say, where, please, has Trump, quote, appeased, unquote, Vladimir Putin? Here are a number of headlines which appeared in U.S. media since we published our first list 2 years ago. Which of these described actions were designed to, quote, appease Putin or Russia? Let's take turns reading these headlines. Why don't you start with the first one from the Washington Post on February 1st of 2019.
United States to withdraw from nuclear arms control treaty with Russia, raising fears of a new arms race.
And that began from the Washington Post of February 1st of 2019. Then from Reuters of June 13th of 2019. Putin says U.S.-Russia relations are getting, quote, worse and worse. That began from Reuters, June 13, 2019.
United States Army Times, 8 July 2019. Green Berets train Polish Latvian resistance units in West Virginia.
And really, there is a remarkable, we've spoken about the genesis of the Green Berets coming right from the Gaylor Morgue, right at the tail end of World War II, but then in the past. Now, that's from Army Times of July 8th of 2019. From the New York Times of August 1st of 2019, Trump adds to sanctions on Russia over Skirpals. That was the scurrious alleged, I mean, what was the name of that nerve gas that supposedly... the state of the art, and they're supposed to use, put what's the name of the guy, the alleged, Russian resistance leader, had it put, he passed away recently, supposedly put in his, Novichok, that's it, a state of the art nerve gas, I mean, a gram of that will kill thousands and thousands of people. But supposedly, what's the name of that? That, you know, he's dead now. Now his wife has taken over. The guy who was the Russian resistance, quote, resistance leader, you know, courtesy of the National Endowment for Democracy and stuff. But anyway, they supposedly put Novichok in his underwear.
Real quick, I believe his name was Alexei Navalny. Navalny is his last name.
That's exactly. Alexei Navalny, if you should pronounce it. Yep.
There you go.
Supposedly they put Novichok, a state-of-the-art nerve gas, which, again, a gram will kill thousands and thousands of people. They put it in his underwear. I mean, it just, this absolute BS. But continuing, from the New York Times, again, of August 1st of 2019, I'm going to reread this. Trump adds to sanctions on Russia over Skripals, also supposedly hit by a Novichok. Continue, Marty.
BBC, 2 August 2019. INF nuclear treaty. United States pulls out of Cold War era pact with Russia.
From the Daily Signal of August 2nd of 2019, U.S. slaps new sanctions on Russia for 2018 nerve agent attack. Again, the Skripals.
National Interest, and this is 29 September 2019, 1,000 U.S. troops are headed to Poland.
From CBS News of the next day, September 30th of 2019, U.S. sanctions Russians over attempted interference in 2018 elections.
CNN, 22 November 2020, United States formally withdraws from Open Skies Treaty that bolstered European security.
The next one is really interesting. I mean, we use the term deep state. I mean, it's not deep, it's the state. But, you know, well, we are hearing all about, again, what Trump has done to Russia. And, you know, the continuity between you have Obama and Biden and Trump. It is absolute continuity. But I've included the articles in the written description for the show. But in the interest of time, we'll just read the headlines. From the BBC of December 21st of 2019, Nord Stream 2, Trump approves sanctions on Russia gas pipeline. And again, the whole article there is will be in the written description. But so if you want to read that, I mean, it's just – but notice that they're sanctioning the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, you know. And, of course, we know what happened to that. You know, it was September 2022. It got blown up. And Ukraine did not have the capabilities of doing that. The U.S. did. But continue Monty, with the next MSN article.
Right. That's MSN reading again, MSN, 19 February 2020. Trump sanctions Russia's largest oil company for aiding Maduro in Venezuela.
Isn't that sweet? Newsweek, March 7th of 2020. Russia says new U.S. weapon threatens nuclear war.
Town Hall, 25 July 2020. Trump continues to be exceedingly tough on Russia.
New York Times, September 1st of 2020. U.S.-Russia military tensions intensify in the air and on the ground worldwide.
L.A. Times, 16 October 2020. White House rejects Putin's proposal to extend last United States-Russia nuclear arms treaty.
NPR, November 24th of 2020. U.S. and Russian navies involved in brief confrontation at sea.
14 December 2020, AP reports U.S. sanctions NATO ally Turkey over Russia missile defense.
From Law Story of December 15th of 2020, Pompeo accuses Russia of sowing, quote, chaos, unquote, in the Mediterranean.
23 December 2020, Reuters, exclusive, United States preparing new sanctions to impede Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline.
Again, no, and this is December 23rd of 2020, that Reuters story, but notice that they're already going after the Nord Stream pipeline. And again, I have that whole article in the written description that will be available presently on the SpitfireList.com website. And again, neither Monty nor myself get some money from this. But Bernhard goes on to add to that wonderful archive. As we have written before, when one adds up all those actions, one can only find that Trump cares more about Russia than about the U.S. and its NATO allies. Only with Trump being under Putin's influence, knowingly or unwittingly, could he end up doing Russia so many favors. Not. I mean, it's absolutely wild. And then notice the following, and this was on May 18th of 2022, okay? And we've spoken in the past about how Russia was baited into invading Ukraine. Well, they were basically going to wipe out the ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine who've been fighting a civil war there. And they basically realized what was about to happen to them. They appealed to Putin to give them Russian status. The Duma did that. And that's when the military operation took place. It was basically either the ethnic and linguistic Russians in eastern Ukraine got exterminated or the war began. And we've spoken at length, and I realize I'm telescoping off of not only history, but things spoken about in the past. And then on May 18th of 2022, that same Moon of Alabama blog has the following. I'm going to ask you to read the quote that I have there, but how Europe was pushed towards economic suicide. And what did the aforementioned Victoria Nuland, Sticky Vicky, the cookie monster of the Maybomb coup, how did she characterize this whole dynamic with regard to the Nord Stream 2 pipeline?
Quote, as hawkish Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, Victoria Nuland explained in a State Department press briefing on 27 January, if Russia invades Ukraine one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward. The problem is to create a suitably offensive incident and depict Russia as the aggressor, end quote.
That right after the war began, and then in September, 4 months later, Nord Stream 2 gets blown up. The largest state Paris incident, arguably, in history, and they say, well, we don't know. Maybe Russia did it. I mean, it's unbelievable. Moon of Alabama blog, again, on November 7th of 2024, followed up on what we've spoken about. And we'll see how long this is, Monty. Maybe we'll take turns reading it. It's called Trump and Ukraine. And I'll begin reading here. It says, how will a president-elect Donald Trump handle the war in Ukraine? I doubt that he will be able to close down the war in 24 hours as he had promised. I rather think that he will escalate it. As I stated 2 weeks ago, I expect the new president to double down on the anti-Russian project in Ukraine. A new Wall Street Journal piece on Trump's promise does not give me any reason to believe otherwise. Trump promised to end the, now this is a Wall Street Journal article. Trump promised to end the war in Ukraine. Now he must decide how. Foreign policy advisors close to the president-elect put forth different versions of a plan to effectively freeze the front line. Go ahead, Marty. Take it from there.
Like in Trump's first term, different factions are set to compete to influence the Republicans' foreign policy. More traditionally minded allies such as Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, now in contention to lead the Pentagon, are likely to push for a settlement that doesn't appear to give a major win to Moscow. Other advisors, particularly Richard Grenell, spelling on that as G-R-E-N-E-L-L, a top candidate to lead the State Department or serve as a national security advisor, could give priority to Trump's desire to end the war as soon as possible, even if it means forcing Kiev into significant concessions. But what are ways to do that? You're about to say something, Dave.
I'll pick it up for a minute. One idea proposed inside Trump's transition office, detailed by three people close to the president-elect and not previously reported, would involve Kiev promising not to join NATO for at least 20 years. In exchange, the U.S. would continue to pump Ukraine full of weapons to deter a future Russian attack. Under that plan, the front line would essentially lock in place and both sides would agree to an 800-mile demilitarized zone. Who would police that territory remains unclear, but one advisor said the peacekeeping force wouldn't involve American troops nor come from a U.S.-funded international body such as the United Nations. We, quote, we can do training and other support, but the barrel of the gun is going to be European, unquote, a member of Trump's team said. You're right, this is Dave. We are not sending American men and women to uphold peace in Ukraine, and we are not paying for it. Get the Poles, Germans, British, and French to do it. And we'll skip down. About the other, I mean, it just, it ain't going to work. And, highway of passage from the moon of Alabama. Swift, a stop to the war, unquote, will be nothing more than a pause after the what Bernhard has done here is to quote from Dmitry Primin, Primin, P-R-E-M-I-N, the former director of Carnegie Moscow Center, writes in Kommersant, if we are talking about the cessation of hostilities along the existing line of contact, then this approach is unlikely to be taken seriously in Moscow. Such a, quote, stop the war, unquote, stop to the war, unquote, will be nothing more than a pause, after which the conflict will flare up with renewed vigor and probably with greater intensity. The nature of the future Ukrainian regime, the military and military economic potential, as well as the military political status of Ukraine, are of paramount importance for Russia. In addition, it is necessary to take into account the new territorial realities. And then Bernhard goes on to say, all those items would require serious concessions by the U.S., which the future Trump administration will be unwilling to give. It is hard to expect the Trump administration to agree to a substantive dialogue on these issues, much less to take into account Russia's core interests. If he shows readiness, the dialogue will start, but even in this case, an agreement is far from guaranteed. And the continue, Marty, where it says there is also the major issue of trust. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
There is also the major issue of trust. A separate topic is what can be considered satisfactory guarantees and conditions when both parties do not trust each other at all. Two, Minsk agreements, that's 2014 and 2015 agreements respectively, were violated. The third attempt, the Istanbul, initiated in 2022, was thwarted. So the fourth one is unlikely to happen. The only guarantee that Russia can rely on is a guarantee for itself. The only guarantee to Russia is a permanent, conventional superiority over Ukrainian forces. Any new arms for Ukraine would undermine that. But acknowledging Russia's superiority is exactly the loss the United States does not want to concede. The author of Events in Ukraine comes to a similar conclusion. Quote, personally, this is what I predict happening if Trump gets into office. If is even necessary at this point, parenthetically, I think we could say, yeah, he's going to get back in, he's in. Continuing, Trump proposes Putin a compromise deal in Ukraine. Putin refuses, given that he's winning on the battlefield. See my military newsletters. Trump is enraged by this loss of face and encouraged by his Ukraine hawk advisors like Pompeo, who called for a $500 billion lend-lease for Ukraine this July. What does he do next? De-escalate? Hard to believe. Indeed, hard to believe.
Contel, continue from there. The war will go on. Russia will have to, as Gordon Hahn predicts, cross the Dnieper, retake Odessa, and threaten Kiev. Zelensky is unlikely to politically survive such a situation. Other forces would come to the fore. The pivot of decision-making will then shift to Kiev and the question of whether Zelensky or any Ukrainian leader is able to start peace talks at all, no less ones that presuppose loss of territory as part of any settlement with Moscow without prompting a domestic political crisis. The resulting coup poker game could involve a Kiev-based coup led by intelligence and security forces, the HRU and or SBU, or emerge from the periphery at the front with ultra-nationalists and neo-fascists such as the Ukrainian Volunteer Corps, BUK, Azov, by the way, linked not only to the Nazis in Blood Tribe, but also to the, quote, attempts, unquote, on Trump's life, and again, the deep state. By the way, if all this you know, oh, Russia's doing this, Russia's doing that, bear in mind, but Lee Harvey Oswald, who was a U.S. intelligence agent who didn't kill anybody, but he was framed as a, quote, communist, unquote. So this is an old game. One more time. Mm-hmm. The resulting coup poker game could involve a Kiev-based coup led by intelligence and security forces, the HRU and or SBU, or emerge from the periphery at the front with ultra-nationalists and neo-fascists, such as the Ukrainian Volunteer Corps, remember that, DUK, Azov, and others well-armed as part of Ukraine's armed forces, turning their guns around and marching on Kiev in order to seize power. A U.S.-backed coup might preempt, precede, or facilitate such a turn of events. Washington and Brussels might gamble that easing or allowing the radicals' rise to power is the only way to rally what remains of the Ukrainian nation so the effort to hand Moscow a strategic defeat, unquote, can be realized and further NATO expansion can be secured. But a fascist coup, supported by the U.S. or not, will not be able to change the situation on the ground. Russia would still have the upper hand and win the war, because we've had one of those here now. Only a direct intervention by NATO could be able to change that trajectory. That, however, would likely expand the war into a global contest that not even Trump's hawks will want to pursue. Yeah, well, we'll see. And already they're gaming the landscape. They're gaming the whole thing, and we're being we see all these scary stories about what's happening in Ukraine. Go ahead, Marty, read the next New York Times. So I get bearing in mind that the New York Times normally published the Warren Report, but they are the CIA's number one propaganda asset. Continue, Marty.
So this is from New York Times, 5 November 2024. North Korea enters Ukraine, fight for first time official stay by Michael Schwartz and Julian E. Barnes.
Notice the headline. North Korea enters Ukraine, fight for first time officials say. I mean, officials say. Well, certainly the officials wouldn't, they wouldn't lie to us. Would they, Marty? Do you think the officials would lie to us?
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course, I mean, I'm being sarcastic. As Nikki said, I know. A joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling, and I've had a lot of feelings die on me. Because why don't you read a little bit of that article, Marty? As much as you can say before you puke. Go ahead.
Right. Quote, Western and Ukrainian officials have called the appearance of North Korean forces on the battlefield a major escalation. North Korean troops have entered the fight in Russia's war against Ukraine, clashing for the first time with Ukrainian forces who are occupying a large chunk of Russia's cursed region, according to a senior Ukrainian official and a senior U.S. official. The engagement was limited, the Ukrainian official said, and likely meant to probe the Ukrainian lines for weaknesses. The North Koreans fought together with Russia's 810 separate naval intelligence infantry brigade, the official said. It was unclear when the fighting took place.
Let me jump in right there. It says it was unclear when the fighting took place. This is the era of Google Earth and Starlink. I mean, they would have known exactly when and where that fighting took place. And I'll also point something out in passing. Russia and North Korea have a defense pact. It would not be in any way a violation of anything for North Korean troops to be fighting on Russian soil. But there is,
if I may give a historical parallel just for a moment on that note, Dave, it has to be appreciated that General Charles Willoughby, as the CIA commander of intelligence operations during the Korean War, he actually reached out to one of his Gladio allies, Turkish intelligence, and dispatched an entire division of Turkish soldiers to North Korea during the Korean War. So there is a parallel here in terms of deploying troops from one end of the planet to the other in terms of Korean operations. But there it is.
One of the things I want to point out, too, is, you know, North Korea, the Korean War, and we're going to be talking in programs to come about General Ari Suseizo, I think his name would actually be pronounced, and about Syngman Rhee, about General Kim Suk-won, about Tsubi Masanobu, about Willoughby, about the Korean War. I mean, this whole thing is a direct outgrowth of you've spoken in the past, Melody, accurately you've characterized my work as Eurocentric. It has been. But the same thing, to make a very, very long story, very, very short, the same thing that happened in Europe with Reinhard Gehlen also happened in Asia with Seizo Aris and Tsubi Masanobu. And as a member of the Vietnam generation, I'm really coming to, let's not forget, who drew the line of demarcation between, quote, North Korea, unquote, and, quote, South Korea, unquote, Papa Fudi at parallel was Captain Charles Bonesville and Captain David Dean Rusk. And if that last name rings a bell for people, it's the same Dean Rusk who went to work for the Asia Foundation of Rockefeller Intel Fund. He was an aide to Admiral Hillenkoetter, one of the early directors of the CIA. And, of course, he was Secretary of State under JFK and kept his mouth shut when JFK's Asia policy was completely reversed by his assassination. So, but yeah, as we in weeks to come unpack all of this, that's why Jack Ruby, in his last letter said, no, the Nazis were running things now, but he said the old warlords are in on it as well. And of course he had a member of the Cabinet Research Bureau standing right next to him at that remarkable press conference that he gave on the I think it was past midnight, so it would have been November 23rd. Now, bear in mind about how the landscape is being gamed. I remember New York Times article from that same day, November 5th of 2024, election day, by the way, and by the same people, Michael Swartz and Julian E. Barnes. And look at the headline again. Russia plotted to put incendiary devices on cargo planes, officials say. Well, again, That does it for me. Those officials wouldn't lie to us. No, they wouldn't do that. Ha! I mean, it's so hard to avoid reaching into the foulest backwaters of my vocabulary. The subheader, Western officials are investigating whether devices planted at Western officials are investigating whether devices planted at shipping hubs in Europe may have been a test run by Russian operatives for placing them on planes bound for the U.S. I mean, if they decide to bring down an airline, one of the original focal points, by the way, of the Northwoods operations that we've spoken about.
Right.
Russia, they put the incendiary devices on the planes. But officials say, I mean, it just, I think in the interest of time, this entire article is on the written, this will be in the written description for this, but 3 days after that, November 8th, 3 days after Election Day, what do we hear from ABC News? Go ahead, Monty, with that next article from ABC News and Yahoo News.
Right. So the article is by Mike Levine and Aaron Kartitsky, and this is Yahoo News, ABC News, 8 November 2024. Three charged in Iran-linked plot to assassinate Donald Trump as revenge for killing Qasem Soleimani, Department of Justice.
And then, so the Department of Justice, I mean, bear in mind, this is 3 days after Election Day. And we've spoken about the staged attempts on Donald Trump's life, in past programs. The CIA is not, the Secret Service is not incompetent, neither is the FBI. And they didn't just, Thomas Cook, he's calling along the bleeping rooftops, right? People phoning, are filming him on their phones, right? There is no way that wasn't allowed to happen. And then the guy who was working with the International Brigade, I've forgotten his name, we've spoken about him at length and, for the record, 1347, 1348, it was Kyle Rushton, I'm forgetting his name offhand, just read the first couple of paragraphs, Monty.
Of course.
But notice that 3 days after Election Day, the Attorney General unpacks the Russian plot to assassinate Trump. Now, is this a forecast? Are they going to sacrifice Trump? Who knows? Well, stay tuned. Go ahead, Monty. Read the first couple of paragraphs.
Right. So three people have been charged in an alleged Iran-linked plot to assassinate President-elect Donald Trump, an Iranian-American activist, and two Jewish Americans living in New York, according to a criminal complaint unsealed Friday in New York. Farhad Shakti, Carceli Rivera, and Jonathan Lodoff are charged with the murder for hire, according to U.S. Department of Justice. Rivera and Lodoff have been arrested, while Shakti is who the FBI described as an, quote, asset, end quote, of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps is believed to be in Tehran.
Now keep in mind, we're talking about Russians are putting incendiary devices on U.S. planes. North Korean troops are now entering the fight in Ukraine. And Iran is now trying to assassinate Donald Trump. Do you really think that Donald Trump and the people around him are going to say, nope, that's fake. No, we're not going to do that. You know, and I love, Monty, I love all of the Muslim Americans who voted for Jill Stein because they couldn't vote for Kamala Harris because of Gaza. I mean, what's happening in Gaza is horrifying, of course. But wait till you see what Donald, you think Donald Trump is going to say to Benjamin Netanyahu, is going to say, hey, listen, Ben, I want you to stop doing what you're doing in Gaza, you know, and then Lebanon, get your boys out of Lebanon, you know, and they just, and you know, are we going to see a combined Israeli American assault on Iran? Are they going to kill Donald Trump and blame it on Iran? Stay tuned.
And, well, of course, real quick, and a very perverse, and I would stress that this is a very perverse personal thought of mine. We have to appreciate that the Christian identity movement has long promoted the idea of a savior that would bring peace to the Middle East. And I wonder if President Trump won't fill that role along with Netanyahu in tow, you know? But hey, if you believe in that, I got a bridge to sell you on the dark side of the moon.
Well, also the eschatological Christians who have also gathered around Trump, they right. see the restoration of Israel as a prequel, a necessary prequel to the War of Megiddo or Armageddon.
Yeah, the Battle of Armageddon, yeah.
Yep, and we may be coming back. You know, we've spoken at length about the assassinations of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and we also have heard about Bobby Jr. And from National Public Radio of June 25th of 2024, there are signs Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s presidential campaign is struggling by A. Martinez. And it says, NPR's A. Martinez speaks with Amaryllis Fox Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s campaign manager and daughter-in-law, about the challenges facing Kennedy's independent presidential campaign. Quote, the first presidential debate of 2024 will feature only two candidates, President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump. Independent Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was not able to meet CNN's criteria for Thursday's face-off. Add to that lackluster fundraising numbers, and there are signs that the campaign is struggling. Let's ask Kennedy's campaign manager. She's also his daughter-in-law, Amaryllis, A-M-A-R-Y-L-L-I-S, Fox Kennedy. So Thursday, your candidate will not be on stage with Joe Biden and Donald Trump. How much of a missed opportunity is that for the campaign? But he's on stage with Donald Trump. Now he's going to be doing that. But let's not jump too far ahead. Now, Amaryllis Fox Kennedy, Bobby, why don't you read the headline and unpack the following excerpt for us?
This is a Kennedy family bliss we're talking about?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, geez. Yeah, okay. Kennedy family bliss. RFK's namesake grandson weds former CIA officer at family compound. And this is put out by people.com. And this is, it looks like you're, this is put up by Kathy Erdrich Dowd, I believe is the last name on that. D-O-W-D.
Kathy E-H-O-I-C-H Dowd. D-O-W-D, like the name Dowd. And that's from July 8th of 2018. And, who is this wonderful daughter-in-law of his, and also, not incidental, his campaign manager? Go ahead, Bobby.
Right. So it's Robert F. Kennedy III, wed former CIA officer Amaryllis Fox at the family's famed estate in Hannesport, Massachusetts. Another milestone just taken place at the iconic Kennedy compound on Cape Cod. Robert F. Kennedy III, the namesake grandson for the famed politician who was assassinated 50 years ago, wed former CIA officer Amaryllis Fox at the family's famed estate in Annisport, Massachusetts on Sunday. Quote,
yeah, it really is. We'll skip the rest of it. You make just a Biden about the green and fall. Sure. I mean, it just makes me want to puke. But yes, no, this really is a milestone was indeed reached. Now, this is not only Kennedy's daughter-in-law, but also his campaign manager, and she is a, quote, ex-unquote, that belonged in quotes, CIA officer. It is extremely unlikely.
I just have this much to say. There are no ex-CIA men. That's like being an ex-cockroach.
I like that comparison. And we're talking about Ukraine. Guess who was fighting with the International Legion in Ukraine, the aforementioned International Legion, and the, I can't remember the guy, Routh, I think was his name, Wesley Ryan Routh, R-O-U-T-H. He was the guy, the quote, assassin, unquote, number two, note the quotes. This is from CBS News of October 21st of 2022. No, that's a wrong thing. It was not. Oh, yeah, no, it is. Yes. CBS News of October 21st of 2022. Conor Kennedy. Oh, this is by Caitlin O'Kane. Conor Kennedy, the grandson of Robert F. Kennedy, says he secretly enlisted to fight in Ukraine. Conor Kennedy, the grandson of former U.S. Senator and Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, revealed on Instagram that he secretly enlisted to fight in Ukraine, according to Kennedy's post. He is now home after fighting with Ukraine's International Legion. We'll skip to the rest of that article, Monty. It is just, you know, you've spoken to us in the past about Spas P. Rakin. This is such a grotesque. It's like Bobby Jr.'s children are just urinating all over the graves of their grandfather, of their uncle, and I guess, you know, their grandfather and their granduncle. It's just surreal.
The world has been turned upside down.
It is. You've got one of Bobby Jr.'s kids fighting in Ukraine. You've got another one marrying a quote ex unquote CIA officer who just happens to be the manager of Bobby's campaign. And there is a really interesting article. Once you read this next article, an excerpt for us, Bobby, from Counterpunch.
Oh, for sure. It's Counterpunch Stuart Lawrence, and that's 8/22/2024. RFK Jr. and the politics of opportunism. Quote, more than half of his early funding, about $20 million, through his super PAC, America Values, came from a top Trump mega donor, Timothy Mellon, a scion of the Carnegie Mellon banking family, who is also a top donor to numerous conservative organizations, including MAGA Incorporated, the premier pro-Trump super PAC. Another top donor was financier Ormed Malik, spelling on that is M-A-L-I-K, who leads an anti-woke investment firm that helped launch former Fox News host Tucker Carlson's latest media venture. Predictably, Carlson has also given considerable time and space to RFK Jr. to promote his campaign, while mainstream news outlets, with a few exceptions, have shunned him, end quote.
The point being that Trump's Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s campaign is funded, and Mellon was the same. He was the largest donor to Trump's campaign, along with Miriam Adelson, the widow of Sheldon Adelson, a former quote ex-unquote Mossad officer. but Trump, you know, the American Muslims really hit the nail on the head. Trump is really gonna put the wood to Netanyahu. He's gonna say, listen, Ben, you know, you can't do what you're doing in Gaza, and get out of Lebanon, and, you know, come on, who do you think you're absolutely wild. But Timothy Mellon of the Mellon family, like Peggy Hitchcock Mellon, William Mellon Hitchcock, Andrew Mellon, one of the American oligarchs that is funding Bobby Kennedy's campaign, managed by the quote ex-unquote CIA officer who married his son. And next.
Right.
This is the guy who's going to be directing American health policy, apparently. From Counterpunch Magazine, August 27th of 2024, revealed, this is by David Bonner, B-O-N-N-E-R, revealed RFK Jr.'s best dope stories. RFK Jr. used to shoot heroin with Keith Richards, which I guess is about as cool as shooting heroin gets. Despite his experience with needles, Bobby, as his friends call him, gets a lot of grief from Democrats, medical experts, and his family for being an anti-vax conspiracy monger. Bobby's druggy past is no secret. His 1983 heroin bust was on the front page of the New York Times, and since endorsing Trump on August 23rd, his smack shooting days have been making news again, my favorite example being the Atlantic's tabloidy headline, RFK Jr. was my drug dealer, unquote. However, the media always fails to mention the Keith Richards stuff, which is really the best part. For that, we must turn to the remarkably sordid memoir called Papa John by John Phillips, head of the popular 1960s folk rock vocal quartet The Mamas and the Papas. By the way, Mama Cass also was heavily involved with the whole Manson milieu. Not that you're necessarily sinister, but this is not the course from the whole thing. Continuing. For the benefit of the media, MAGA, and counterpunchers, I've copied the relevant excerpt straight from Papa John's out-of-print book and pasted them below. You're welcome. One of my new acquaintances was Bobby Kennedy Jr. Bobby would usually come by alone to do drugs. Sometimes he would come by several nights a week, hang out, get high, and then go out again, unquote. Bobby was always welcome. He seemed to have life in balance. He could shoot drugs intermittently for a week and then shoot whitewater rapids in some far-flung wilderness, unquote. Bobby had a taste for shooting speedballs that mixed the hazy euphoria of heroin with the clear-headed invincibility of coke. He could handle himself quite well. We would sit up for hours and discuss politics, literature, jazz, blues, art. Bobby had gotten to know Mick and Keith when they were over. We would stay up to all hours, pick out the guitars, and sing blues songs all night. Bobby loved acoustic-style blues the way Keith and Mick would play them with the Mississippi Delta influence of Robert Johnson. Ironically, Bobby and Mick shared an even more obscure field of knowledge, opiate substitutes. He and Mick both at different times asked me to supply them with a methadone-like dolefine. Almost no one had even heard of the Nazis' World War II morphine substitute. It's not methadone-like, it's what methadone is. It was originally called dolefine. It was a synthetic opiate developed by the Bayer Company and IG Farben and named after Adolf Hitler. That's what dolefine is. Now it's called methadone, used to treat a heroin addiction. Continuing. Most coke addicts experience the same bizarre hallucination, disgusting bugs either crawling over them or, in my case, crawling under my skin all over my body. It was the most harrowing aspect of shooting coke, and it blew open the door into the void of insanity. The more I shot coke, the more often I saw them, horrible white bugs like maggots that wiggled and crawled just below the surface of my skin. Freud knew of this psychotic reaction, and it has since been called formiphobia, from the French word for ant, for me, F-O-U-R-M-I. I believe not only that they were real, but they lived in my eyes. I once made Bobby Kennedy stare at my eyes for 15 minutes in the bathroom after shooting up so he could see them come out, unquote. Now, I think this is a wonderful place for a cadence point, Monty. We have about 8 minutes left.
Sure.
This is the guy who's going to be in charge of health policy under Donald Trump. And we'll see. Maybe we'll have time to actually talk about some of the things. He says, you know, he's not going to people will have access to vaccines. One of the things he's been talking about, though, is negating fluoridation of public water supplies. It's actually under the control of states and municipalities. But that is one of the long-time bugaboos of the John Birch Society, getting the fluoride out of the water. And, Monty, that has an even older heritage. Continue.
Yeah, that has an even older heritage, and it's very disturbing. I actually misrepresented it in a private conversation that we had, that it came out of literature of the Third Reich. It actually came out of the literature of Halgua, which was an organization called ORSON, the French Revolutionary Action Party, and that was essentially an anti-Semitic terrorist organization that was hunting down and assassinating leftist leaders and union organizers all throughout France roughly the early 1930s to about the end of the Second World War. In fact, I believe some of the founding members of Kalgua and most of their cadre were indoctrinated into the Charlemagne Waffen SS division by the end of World War II and were involved in the defense of Berlin. But yes, I was able to track an article to published by Kalgua stating that Jews were fluorinating the water in France. You know, so I'll be able to link that in the show notes, I hope. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating that bit of propaganda right there. I mean, it just has a through road in not only the history of European fascism, but American fascism. And the fact that, you know, that is being picked up by somebody that's potentially going to control, all of USDA and FDA approvals is insanely disturbing.
Yep. And I think, you know what, it's just absolutely wild. And this is a guy, and bear in mind, again, not only Bobby Jr.'s financing of this campaign, Timothy Mellon, who manages it, the quote, ex-unquote CIA officer, who's also his daughter-in-law, and now he's going to become Trump's, he's a real anti-immigrant guy, he's going to become Trump's, top advisor on health matters. That's going to be great. We have about, I have to watch my language. We have a jokey A blank blank mother effer who's going to be running things. You know, I mean, my God in heaven. You know, there's some things, in a way, none of this surprises me, but this actually does. You know, putting a junkie, this is the guy who's going to be calling health shots, but it's going to be really interesting. We're almost out of time in this one, but in our next show, maybe people will see how much stamina we have, how much time, and our brilliant recording engineer. But, I've spoken about COVID, and COVID does come from a lab. The lab ain't even trying to, it didn't bleep and leak. We talked about that in our last show. But COVID has been covered up by the Biden, and the team is heavily involved with this. Bear in mind that, Bailey Miller, when one thing they don't talk about Hunter Biden's laptop, is the fact that it also discloses his connections with Metabiota, and Metabiota is also linked with the Eco Health Alliance and also involved, courtesy of venture capital from the CIA, with Munich Reinsurance. But there are terrible things going on with COVID. It wouldn't surprise me if we get another COVID virus. And
I just want to state once again a very bizarre observation on my part. I apologize for these bizarre observations.
It's good. The only thing I want to note, Monty, is we only got about 3 minutes left, so make it fast if you would, please.
Well, then I'll skip it and we'll move on to the next program.
Yeah, you know, it really is. It's remarkable. I mean, we if in fact that's something I will interject here. That's interject, not inject. Interject.
Right.
You know, if these things that Bobby is thinking about doing, and, already, diseases like measles and other things that are attenuated by vaccines are on the upswing, but it's going to get to a point where parents won't want to send their kids to school because they're going to get sick.
Absolutely.
And public education has long been in the crosshairs of the far right, and they've also been pushing for homeschooling, and this will give a major boost to that. Anyway, it's just wild.
Let's not forget that the revolutionary idealist behind homeschooling in the 1950s was a colonel by the name of Wickliffe Preston Draper, who founded the Viking League. And of course, he wanted to promote homeschooling in the 1950s because of the advent of desegregation under the Eisenhower administration. So consider that for a moment. The phenomena of homeschooling in the United States has a white supremacist history to it.
Absolutely. And Wycliffe Draper, part of the Draper family, including Brigadier General William Draper, heavily involved with this whole milieu. And we've spoken about that in past programs. Please get the 64-gigabyte flash drive with all of my life's work on it, plus a mini library of old anti-fascist books. If you have problems with the flash drive, technical problems, contact the people who've done it. It won't be ready till later this year, maybe early next year, but it will have all of our conversations to date with Monty, all of my work on the origins of COVID, and please get that because preserving the record for the next generation will be very, very important. And it's just surreal what I see happening. And in our next shows, we're going to be talking about COVID and the fact that it isn't over and it's doing. You know, it's eugenics, Wycliffe Draper and the Viking League, it's doing what the eugenicists have long wanted to do. And the Nazi laws were outgrowths of America.
So glad, and I'm so glad you brought up the Nazi laws, because let's face it.
We've only got a minute left, Monty.
Well, I was just about to say that once the bullets ran out, once the Nazis ran out of bullets, what did they switch to in places like Dachau and Buchenwald? Yeah, they switched to using germ warfare to get rid of the undesirables.
Yep, and there are an awful lot of people who are undesirables here, and Elon Musk will do some of that with his budget cutting, the wealthiest man in the world who's going to, it's going to be a rough ride for those of us, I'm an old guy, I'm 75, I'm dependent on Social Security and Medicare, I paid into it my whole working life, now they're going to take it away, and one of the things, who knows what's going to happen with the non-commercial stations who air the show, Who knows what's going to happen with me, but anyway, get that 64 gigabyte flash drive. I get no money from it. Monty gets no money from it. And the beast is upon us. This concludes, for the record, program number 1358, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 32, being recorded on November 9th of 2024. For Monty, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.